Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM out of Seattle. But actually, today I'm broadcasting live from beautiful Sofia, Bulgaria. It's a beautiful country with beautiful people. I want to tell you this little story about how nice the people are here. When I arrived, I didn't have any local currency, and a gentleman who works for the airline pilot, was behind me. He paid for my subway to downtown. Then once I got to downtown, I got lost walking around looking for my hotel, and a young university student came up and said, "You look lost. Why don't I pay for your taxi to your hotel?" So just lovely people. I can't say enough good things about Bulgaria. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a better place. I want to let everyone know that Michiko Hayashi's mother passed away recently. And I'd like to ask everyone around the world to please send lots of love and light and positive energy to her and her beautiful mom. Michiko, of course, is the head of the Emoto Peace Project, which is a nonprofit children's charity, which teaches children around the world love and gratitude. Their website is www.emotopeaceproject.net. I have a spiritual mentoring program where I also teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. And if you'd like to get in touch with your spirit guides and angels, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. My next Galactic Wisdom Conference, my fifth conference, will be held at the same location it was this year in Olympia, Washington, from April 12th to the 16th. If you're interested, please send me an email. There's a substantial discount of only $55 for the entire conference if you register before December 31st. After December 31st, the conference will go up to $125. And if you'd like to register, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. On my upcoming show scheduled for November 2nd, I will be celebrating my birthday that day, and also 5 years on the air. I want to thank everyone so much for supporting my show. And the purpose of this program is to make the world a better and happier place. And I know that if we all work together, we will make a difference and make this world a better and happier place. Then on November 3rd and 4th, I'll be at the Crystal Spirit Spiritual Center in Tacoma giving readings. And then on November 10th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., I'll be having a very special psychic and haro fair with Michiko Hayashi from the Emoto Peace Project, as well as wonderful vendors. The fair will be held again at 9101 Stillicum Road, Southeast Olympia. The fair is free, and I hope you'll all be able to come. And with that, I'd like to bring on Michiko Hayashi, and she can tell you about the kinds of haro sessions she'll be giving on November 10th in Olympia, Washington.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Ted. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm here in Bulgaria and participating in this water conference. And this has been a beautiful and really important conference where all the new scientists are here sharing all the new researches and how we can apply that. And here, during that time, I am having this poster presentation entitled "The Message from Water and Effect of Haro Vibrational Therapy." Here, I am showing how Dr. Emoto was used to heal people using haro therapy, vibrational machine, and water. And that's what I am going to be doing on the 10th of November in Olympia, Washington, during this time with Ted. So I hope many people will come and hope they can learn about how water and how a vibrational machine can treat people, heal people, solve the problems that people have, because most of them come from their negative emotions and that are in the subconscious mind. I hope people will come. Thank you.
Michiko, if I could ask you a couple of quick questions. What is haro, and how can changing the vibration help people?
Haro means vibration in Japanese. And Dr. Emoto said, and I believe that Professor Einstein also said, that everything is vibration. Now, Dr. Emoto said that each organ, everything has its own intrinsic vibration. And when we are not off balance of these vibration, then the certain parts start to have problems. And if it's mostly it's affected by negative emotions. So by transmitting the the right vibration to such person, then we can avoid having diseases, and also people who have the diseases can heal those diseases with the right vibration by drinking personalized structured water every day, but they have to take some certain days.
And I hope you don't mind me saying this, Michiko, but it's more than just physical problems, because it does help them spiritually too. Can it help them spiritually as well?
Sure, because our thoughts, our emotions, everything is vibration. So it's not only the physical problem, but spiritual and everything else also. I mean, as well as the wishes that we have, like if people want to need some money, then there's a reason why there's a blockage for circulating money. So that's a spiritual reason also. So we can heal that also.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. A lot of people out there may be listening for the first time, and they're wondering, what is Tato? How can that help us? Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Michiko, and sharing that. I also want to tell everyone some good news. You know, I've been mentioning this for months, that the Hopi Indians have been drinking carcinogenic water for a while now, and they have not been able to get any help from the U.S. government. So Liam McLaughlin of the Clean Water Foundation, Martha Childress of the Natural Choice Network, and Michiko Hayashi, who she just came on a minute ago, and myself all stepped in to raise money and buy water units for the delivered to the Hopi so they can finally drink fresh, clean water. And I want to thank everyone so much for helping in this effort. I also will be leading a spiritual trip to visit the Hopi in late April 2019. The proceeds from the trip, 100% will go to the Hopi so they can have more water filters and drink clean water. If you're interested, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. For this part of the show, I'd like to play some interviews I did this afternoon with some amazing and famous scientists, including John Stuart Reed from England, Jerry Pollet from Belgium, Professor Igor German from Yugoslavia, Dr. Giuseppe Vitello from Italy, and Dr. Glenn Rintz, a specialist from Los Angeles. They'll be talking about how water can be used to build water-based quantum computers, as well as the effect of sound on water in healing. And with that, Eric, I'd like to play the first two sets of interview. Then I'll be coming back in about 34 minutes, and I have some additional interviews to play as well. And Eric, thank you so much, as always, for your wonderful help today. Hello, friends. I'm at the International Water Conference here in Sofia, Bulgaria, with some of the world's most fantastic and interesting scientists. And the first person here I'd love to introduce to is a fellow named John Reed. And John, thank you so much for coming on my show today.
It's a great pleasure to be with you.
Thanks, John. You just gave a presentation on some fascinating things about sound and how that can affect it can affect healing, and it can affect all kinds of things. Could you summarize that, if you don't mind? I know that may be difficult, but if you could.
Every aspect of our world is sound. So there's no aspect of the world which is not creating sound.
Okay, great. And you made some fantastic points, too, about geographic or different kinds of forms which are made by sound, and also in the prehistoric record of fossils and all kinds of different living creatures which reflected the same kinds of patterns.
Yeah, there's not really any clear concept as to how life began in the primordial oceans. But what I've seen in my laboratory over the last few years, in fact, almost every day when I'm working with sound in the laboratory, I'm seeing in the cymoscope instrument, which is, by the way, spelled C-Y-M-A, and then scope like microscope, I see every day imprinted into the water images which resemble early life forms. And this got me thinking about the possibility that sound had been in some way involved in the creation of life. And so I looked into that in great detail and came up with a hypothesis involving hydrothermal vents, which, you know, it's well known that it's believed that life began around hydrothermal vents, and where you have all these hot gases, you know, coming up from the mantle and into the ocean water, where microscopic bubbles, in fact, the whole range of bubbles are created. And so the hypothesis that I developed is that the sounds from the hydrothermal vent create patterns which are popularly known today as cymatic patterns. And these cymatic patterns will naturally create places around, effectively wrap themselves around the bubble, exciting the bubble, and creating areas of high pressure and low pressure. So these are antinodes, the high pressure antinodes, and the nodes are the low pressure. And it's in the nodal areas of the pattern around these microscopic bubbles where the building blocks of life could find safe haven, a place where they can literally become they can become coherent and can structure in a way that could lead ultimately to life. And where do the building blocks come from? Well, they, according to recent theories, they come into the oceans from comets. Comets bring these simple amino acids and sugars into the ocean, and then we need a coherent force, something to organize the matter and bring it into a form which, you know, one day created life. At least that's the first part of the hypothesis.
Okay, well, there's a whole bunch of questions, but I'll have to make it short today. But one of the interesting questions raised during your presentation was about cancer cells. And if you broadcast, for example, the right sounds to cancer cells, they could conceivably die from that.
Yeah, cancer cells create, all cells create sound. They have what we could call a sonic signature. And a cancer cell creates a sound, a sonic signature, which is significantly different to that of a healthy cell. And so the general idea is, if you can listen to the cell, to the sound of a cancer cell, and then greatly amplify it, and send that amplified sound back into the cancer cell, then the cancer cell will essentially overheat and die. But the interesting thing about this possibility for the future is that the sounds that you're creating here, these amplified cancer cell sounds, are so significantly different to those of healthy cells that the nearby healthy cells will not be unduly affected by the sound that you're putting in, and therefore they may be a little bit stressed, but they're not actually going to die. And so you could therefore eradicate tumors and other forms of cancer, theoretically at any rate, or at least hypothetically, without affecting the healthy cells.
Okay, turning the question around, I was wondering, could certain sounds also cause cancer?
I guess, yeah. I mean, obviously, if you're in a very high intensity sound environment, then you're going to be stressing your body, and all sorts of aspects of your biology are going to be stressed. So I guess the answer is probably yes, but I don't know that there's any research being done. Certainly stress, for sure, and maybe cancer.
In 1950, the U.S. Changed their musical standard from 432 hertz to 440 hertz. And what I was wondering is that do you think the stress that was changed, actually it was first changed by the Germans in the 1930s under Adolf Hitler, where he changed the musical standard to 440 hertz, because Himmler and Goebbels felt that created people to become more militaristic. I know this is just an interesting question I wanted to ask you about. 432 hertz is supposed to be harmonic, 440 hertz is supposed to cause stress.
Okay, it's a very big topic, but I have actually written an article called The Curious Concert Pitch Conflict, because a lot of musicians around the world are vying for 432 hertz as the standard concert pitch against 440. But the research that I did and that you could read about in this Curious Concert Pitch Conflict, what I found was that although Goebbels had, you know, Nazi, obviously, he had taken part in a meeting that was in London where musicians from all over the world came together to decide upon an international concert pitch. And from my research, Goebbels was only one vote. He only had one vote. I don't actually know what his vote was, but I do know, obviously, ultimately, they did decide on 440. Now, you know, in terms of whether 432 hertz as a concert pitch is in any way natural, which is what is being claimed by the musicians that are vying for it, that is an open question for me, and I need to do a lot of research. But certainly the article that I wrote is interesting, and I've taken it, so the first part of the article is concerned with the history of concert pitch. The second part, which I'm still busy with, will be concerned with looking at whether there is any significant reason why we should be changing concert pitch to 4-3-2.
Okay, John. Well, thank you so much for these questions. I know I didn't give you any advance warning at all, so you had no time to prepare, but thanks so much for coming on today. You're a fascinating fellow, and I really enjoyed your presentation here at the conference. Thank you so much. My next guest is Jerry Paulette. He's from Belgium. And Jerry, you had an amazing lecture as well. And one of the things you talked about, and I'll paraphrase it, is about using water for quantum computers. Could you explain that a little bit, please?
Sure. First of all, my background is in computer sciences, and I'm in no way involved at this moment in, developing quantum computing. But of course, because of my interest, I'm reading a lot about quantum computers. And if you look at quantum computers, in order to let them to make them work, there are three conditions that they need in order to build what they call qubits. The first condition is superposition. As we know, a computer chip works with one and zeros. Superposition means it can be one, it can be zero, it can be everything in between. The second thing is you need also coherence. They all need to be in the same position at the same time, and then you need entanglement. And I always compare it with people singing. Normally, if you have to sing Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Si, Do, with superposition, it means you can sing all the notes at the same time. That's superposition. Quantum coherence means if you put all, let's say, 100 singers in the same room, and you let them sing, that they all sing at the same time, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Si, Sol, La, Si, Do. And then entanglement means if you take one singer and you put him at the other side of the universe, and then you say to the singers, now you're going to sing Do, that the person at the other side of the universe at the same moment will sing Do. So these are the principles of quantum computing. And currently, a lot of money is going into quantum computing by companies like IBM. IBM is currently in the lead. They announced a couple of months ago the first 50-qubit quantum computers. What you see, however, with all the quantum computers is that in order to keep the superposition intact, the entanglement intact, etc., they have to freeze the quantum computer at very low temperatures, say a few degrees above 0 degree Kelvin.
From one perspective, Gary, actually, we humans are all quantum computers based upon water, aren't we? And we use water as memory storage?
That's a big question, of course. That's something I'm not going to say today, but I think that's where we clearly see that a lot of interest is going into that direction right now.
I see. Well, you're doing fascinating work. Is there anything else you'd like to tell my listeners?
Not really. I would say if you have any ideas or comments, send them to you, and they can send them to me again. Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. Gary, if you could, write down your website too, that would be great, or way to contact you. Okay, great. My next guest is Igor German. He's a, I'm sorry, I want to make sure a German. Okay, wonderful. Sorry, my apologies. You're a professor of theoretical biology, and you work at the University of Ljubljana. Is that correct?
Ljubljana.
Okay, thank you for telling me that. And you also gave a fascinating. A lecture as well. Could you tell us, my listeners, a little bit about your work?
Well, I mostly work at the Bahn Institute, a small private institute, and we are doing the research in the bioelectromagnetics and in the so-called biofield. So the endogenous field of organisms and something that perhaps is more basic than the electromagnetic field, but I will not go further into this now. The second enterprise of our institute, as far as the basic research goes, is the research in the non-contact transference of molecular information from certain substances, like biologically active substances, to water, actually to water solution of calcium silicate. And then we study also how this impacts organisms, mostly human organisms. We also do some, recently we do some research, physicochemical research, so, you know, through certain devices, not only on organisms.
I'm sorry to ask you this, German, Professor German, but I know I've given you no notice of this question, but I've heard of experiments where you have, for example, two glasses of water or two bottles of water, and in one there's a homeopathic substance in one, and after a certain amount of time, the second bottle of water or the second glass of water, will the information from the first bottle will somehow be transferred to the second bottle. Could you explain that? Because that's a fascinating thing, because there's no logical third-dimensional explanation for that.
Well, I think that there is no really elaborated explanation for this, and that Professor Vitello is here that could do this, but I don't know if he really, because, you know, this science is only at its beginning. So I would say that we should have a sort of a carrier field, you know, if you want to do this transference from one test tube to the another test tube, so that in one test tube we would have either some biologically active substance, or we would have some homeopathic remedy, for instance. But we should have a field, let's say low magnetic field, AC field, for instance, like used in the experiments of Montagnier, when he transferred, you know, quite long parts of DNA molecule, you know, from test tube to pure water, you know, and after that they were reproduced almost exactly, you know. So it is difficult to say. I think that there comes to some entanglement between this molecular field, you know, or the field of molecules, and this general carrier field, and somehow this general carrier field unites these two systems. So one, let's say, is a system with substance, and the one with pure water, or some solution, you know, that is waited to be informed.
I almost think that we're going into another dimension, that there are different dimensions. We exist in the third, then there's the fourth and the fifth and so on. Yeah. So perhaps science will eventually move into these other dimensions, because a lot of them are not easily explainable in the third dimension. They defy explanation. And scientists and people just kind of scratch their heads and say, how did that happen?
Perhaps we can speak about other dimensions, but I think that quantum field theory has its say here before we go to other dimension. But speaking metaphorically, I can say yes, these other dimensions are here in the sense of our knowledge. I think that contemporary science is very limited, and not only regarding water, but also regarding other stuff, as it was presented in this conference, like biochemistry, like the work of enzymes and so on. And so we can say that there is a really very big need, you know, for a new dimension of our knowledge, you know, of our understanding of nature and of water.
Well, thank you so much, Igor. That's really profound, and I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with all of my listeners today. And I really appreciate your work, too, because you all have something very profound to say. And I think that's the reason why this water conference is so important, because you're going into areas. It's like Star Trek. You're stepping into areas where no one has gone before. So, and that makes it all the more interesting. My next guest is a wonderful gentleman named Giuseppe Vitellio. Is that right? Oh, Vitellio, yes. And I have to tell you too, Giuseppe, when you smile, the whole room lights up. You have a very nice smile.
Thank you. I would be much more pleased if you would be a nice, beautiful lady. Telling me that. Okay, I'm joking, of course. And thank you very much for... what I could tell you. Let's say that you must be lucky in your life, in the sense that you must meet the right people. And this was my what happened to me. I met, for example, Professor Montagnier and Walter Freeman, a famous neurophysiologist, and Umezawa, a great father of quantum field theory. So, I mean, I just came from these people. And in some sense, I repeat what they have been teaching to me when we were working together. Here I was presenting, indeed, something which do happens almost every day now in every biology laboratory, namely the multiplication of DNA in what is called polymerase chain reaction, shortly PCR. Now, in this process, you have a piece of DNA which you want to study, and for that you need to have to multiply, to have many copies of it. So to do that, you put this template, biologists call. I'm a physicist, so I'm a little bit, I'm just supplying with some tool this. So you put this template of DNA in the, in a water tube, and then you put enzymes and other nucleotides and other things called primers. And then you have cycles, and after these cycles in this machine, which is a PCR machine, you get many copies of your original template. The point is, you see, Gary Mullis got a Nobel Prize because he changed this process in such a way that is very friendly today. Everybody, I mean, just you need a little bit of experience you can do by yourself in some sense. So what happens in that machine? This is the problem. What happens? How is possible that you make an alignment of hundreds of nucleotides, which are these, let's say, molecules, in the proper order? If you just compute the probability in any... that is zero. Because to put many, many objects in the proper alignment, the probability is very low. In this case, it's almost practically zero. So it's not just you need a guided construction. So where is the guide? A sort of a waveguide, in some sense. The point is that all of it does not happen if you are not in the water. If these things are not in the water. So you have DNA in the water, these nucleotides in the water, everything is in the water. If you take out the water, everything disappears, in the sense that does not even act as in biology. So water is crucial, and this is the object of our attention.
Giuseppe, please continue explaining.
salt water, which is so important, behaves, the water molecules all together, they behave like an orchestra playing in phase, playing in synchrony, in syntony, and the result is that out of such a beautiful orchestra, it is possible to solve the problem of put so many nucleotides, one next to the other one, in the proper order.
Well, that's really amazing. So water acts like an orchestra, finding a symphony of life, in other words.
Yes.
One of the things that Dr. Masaru Emoto said years ago, and I'm going to talk, I have another wonderful person here, Glenn Reen, I'm going to ask him some questions, is that the humans are 70% water and the earth is 70% water, which I thought was always fascinating. So we humans are sort of like a, our reflection of this planet. And that leads me to my next guest, Glenn Reen. Glenn, hi Glenn, so nice to have you here.
It's a pleasure.
Tell me, you've written some wonderful articles, and you're giving a presentation today on information storage capability of water. And this was something that Jerry Pollack talked about earlier. Talked about earlier about building a quantum mechanical computer based upon water. Could you explain in 25 words or less how information can be a storage capability? No, you can have more than 25 words if you like.
Well, we know that water has a lot of anomalous properties. When you treat water with an electromagnetic field, for example, you get certain changes. The physical properties change, the electrical properties change, the optical properties change. But what's really weird about water is that after you turn off the stimulus, the changes last for as many as months later. Whatever change was produced lasts. So therefore, we talk like water has a memory. It remembers what it's been exposed to. So that's the phenomena. So before you ask me about the mechanism, you have to understand the phenomena. The mechanism is a better question for Dr. Fitelio, because it's a question of physics. The explanation is in terms of quantum physics. The best explanation is in terms of quantum physics, because water behaves as a quantum system, and quantum systems can have all kinds of anomalous properties like memory.
Ah, interesting. And there was a guest that I had on my radio show. He was from Argentina. It was about 2 years ago, and his name was Matthias Di Stefano. He has vivid, very detailed memories of living in Atlantis 15,000 years ago, and he explained how the Atlanteans use water as a base to build quantum computers for memory storage. And they actually added an extra water molecule, like easy water, for that memory storage. And this is something that Jerry Pollack, that you talked about as well. How could a quantum computer, do you think, could be built with water?
Well, it's just a hypothesis. Eh? If you look at easy water, it really looks like quantum coherent water for me. Yeah. And if you then take, for instance, the building blocks of the cells, and okay, I take very many steps forward, like microtubuli, which can do beautiful things like splitting the cells and copying the DNA and everything. These are just empty tubes filled with water. So the question is, how are they capable to do that? And as we heard before, in complete symphony with each other. And I think there is no other explanation than if you involve indeed quantum physics with that. But then if you start looking at it and you start to understand how a quantum computer is working, then you see a lot of similarities. And again, this is just a hypothesis which needs further investigation. But I think there is certainly something there.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Glenn, I'd love your comments on that as well.
Well, we just decided that water has quantum properties, and one of the unique properties of quantum systems is that time is not linear, and time can, well, let's say time reversal is possible. That term is usually in the physics literature. And if you can go backwards in time, then you can access experiences you've had in past lives. But then the real question is, who's going back in time? What's going back in time? And my answer to that would be your own consciousness. And it seems that's one of the abilities of human consciousness also, to go backwards in time. That's my explanation.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, for a lot of us, when you look at a glass of water, you think all water is the same, but it's not the same, is it?
Well, every water on the planet that we drink is different from other waters because of the mineral content, primarily. The European waters have different minerals than the American waters, but these days, drinking water has become a very popular commodity, and people are now adding anything you can think of to water, not only minerals, but, of course, amino acids and herbs. We're even adding things like hydrogen and oxygen to water, so gases. So water is an amazing carrier for lots of things.
Mm-hmm. There's a whole group of people, too, that use easy water for health reasons, and they program water to make people healthier. I'd love your opinion on that, Glenn.
Well, let's talk about programming water. I use the term imprinting because that's the more scientific term. And several of the people from this group right here have done research in this area and evaluated various commercial devices which, quote, claim to imprint water or to structure water. There are two things you can do with an external force, with like an electromagnetic field. And the problem is that most of the commercial waters out there that they tell you it's blessed by a rabbi or it's got the magic properties of natural spring waters, that most of the waters don't have any scientific research behind them. But there are labs like my lab and Dr. Yerman's lab that do test these kind of products for efficacy. And we can say that some of the products actually do work and some of them don't. So the problem is left up to the consumer to figure out which is which.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Fascinating. Giuseppe, I'd love your opinion on that too.
We are at the beginning. In the sense that we, since long, we use water and we are water in some sense. What will be possible to do with water? I like to talk instead of a memory of water, which is something one can even test, about oblivion of water. Water can forget. If water would not be forgetting, we would be like crystals. So this flexibility of water is maybe something very, very important, which could give us a lot.
Okay, fascinating, fascinating. And Jerry, I'd love your opinion on it, too.
I just did.
Okay, all right. Well, if you had anything more to say, that would be great. Igor, Professor German, I'd love your opinion.
On testing water, at our institute we are doing such testing, and I think that, as my predecessor said, Glenn, certain devices for influencing water, you know, for instance, for enhance healing properties of water, or just to have some beneficial effects, work. Others do not work. And we test this by physiological tests, clinical tests, with double-blind manner, so that even one who operates, you know, does not know which water is which. And I can say that human body can really demonstrate the effects of, let's say, imprinted water, if it really works, even if the person, so the volunteer, by his or her consciousness, does not recognize the difference, you know. The body recognizes a difference, and really, we always ask persons too, you know, do you see any difference, or what do you say, which was the controlled water, which was the true water, and the answers are random, but physiological tests, like, you know, EEGs means brain waves or heart waves or temperature or muscle tension and so on, they demonstrate the difference.
I see. Okay. Fascinating. Well, water is something that I think many of us take for granted here on the planet, and many of us, before they really know about water, don't realize that there's clear differences in water, and it can be used as a very valuable tool for memory storage, for healing, and all kinds of uses. I'm sorry. Oh. Oh yes.
Well, this is the country where this conference is going on. Bulgaria is a country of mineral water known since very, very long time ago. They are proud of this, people, Bulgarians. And there are many places, terms, where Romans, even before Romans, they were coming here for staying better.
Oh, wonderful. Well, it's all the more important reason to have a water conference here in Sofia, Bulgaria. A beautiful country and people are so nice. I want to thank everyone so much for coming on today, and I really appreciate it. All of you are doing fantastic work, and you're really helping humanity out. And any support I can provide, I'd love to do it. I want to thank you so much for coming on today.
That was a several scientists, about six different scientists, famous scientists here at the Water Conference, who were kind enough to give me their time today to talk about their fascinating research on water. I want to bring Michiko Hayashi back on again because she will be giving presentations at Watkins Bookstore in June, and she'll also be going to Glastonbury. Glastonbury is one of England's most spiritual places. Both of those events will be occurring in June, so please mark that on their calendar. We'll be for more information, just send me an email. I'll be giving you more information about the venues and everything and the specific dates. Also, Michiko will be in Iceland on October 29 and 30. And for those of you interested in seeing her in Iceland give a presentation, please send me an email. She'll be giving a presentation on October 30th. And I wanted to ask you, we've gotten a couple of questions in by email, Michiko. The Hado sessions themselves, I mean, once you drink the water, does everything change? Do you change the vibration, your body's vibration, so you correct whatever's wrong with you? Is that how that works?
That's right. That's how it works. What we do is we scan the person's vibration and with this Hado machine. And when we find out the cause of the root cause of the problem that they have with the vibration-wise, then we imprint water for the person so that the water will help raise the vibration or cancel out the negative vibration. Once the person starts drinking this the personalized programmed water, imprinted water, then this person's vibration will start to be adjusted or neutralized. That means it will be the way it should be. So that's how it works. I hope they can understand.
Okay, no, I think people understand that, especially now since the vibrations of the planet are rapidly rising. I want to go to the Moto Peace Project for a moment and ask why Dr. Moto thought the Moto Peace Project, why did he want to teach children love and gratitude in his books?
Well, thank you for asking. This Moto Peace Project is for children, but for all people. But we focus on children because children are the future of this earth. And when they learn about the very unique property of water, which We say that water has memory, and when we expose the negative or positive energy to water, or whatever the words are, or whatever our emotions are, then water absorbs that vibration, and that affects ourselves, because we are 70% water. Children are more water than we are. So when they learn to live in a kind and loving being, then they will be healthy, and they will, their life will be good and happy and peaceful. So, and also that because they, we are the vibrational beings, we affect each other. We affect our environment also. So that by, well, with the children learning that, they will affect each other. They will create the better world altogether. So that's the idea of Emerald Peace Project. And we are, through this children's book of The Message from Water, or the story of Message from Water, that's the teachings of water, adults, everyone should be learning about this, because this changes, once they learn about this, they learn how to live well, how to be, live happily, how to live in a harmonious way with other people and with all the living beings.
Now, when Dr. Emoto started the Emoto Peace Project back in 2005 with a speech to the United Nations, he promised to deliver 650 million books to all the children of the world. Now, that's a lot of books for your office to do. But do you think that if children around the world all learned to treat each other with more respect, with love and gratitude, that we would have a better world?
Of course we will. I mean, without any doubt, because children, the more children learn about that, the more harmonious world it will be. And we won't want to fight. We want to be living service for other people, service for everything. So, and people will be very kind. So the world will be peaceful and really happy.
Okay, good. Now, there's something else I want to ask you, too. People may say, well, words are just words, but words have power, don't they? And they do affect consciousness and how we live. Could you explain that, please?
Words in any language, every single word has its own energy. Everything is energy. So if the word is a positive word, that word has positive energy. And when we use the positive word, it comes back to us, because that's the law of resonance.
How did the words that Dr. Emoto used with the water, like love and gratitude, positive words versus negative words, show themselves in the crystals in the water?
How did
love and gratitude, when you send positive words to, when you say words, positive words to a water, what happens to the water?
Oh, okay. What Dr. Emoto did was to just show the word love and gratitude in Japanese and other languages also to water. We just glue the words to water and set it for 24 hours and then take crystals from that. And the water at the molecular level, they make beautiful crystals when we show beautiful love and gratitude words in any languages they do.
Okay, so let's say that someone, let's say when a person says something negative to someone, like I hate you, for example, what would happen to the water molecules on the molecular level if someone says something negative like that?
It's going to be distorted. Water won't be able to create beautiful hexagonal crystal, because the energy is destructive. And the water molecule cannot create a beautiful crystal. So that's what happens in our body also, because we are water.
There's an old saying in the United States, Michiko, I don't know if you've heard it or not, but sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me. But that's not true, is it? Words can harm you.
Words are really strong vibration. So when we once say it, then it's sound. Sound is vibration. The words, once we say something, that's vibration. Vibration is energy. So when it's something negative, that's, that has a negative vibration. So words are really important. And we really should be using positive words. That really creates our life. So it's so important to use positive words.
Actually, Michiko, I just mentioned that not just to bring out that point, that words are very important. Now, one thing that John Stuart Reed, Dr. Reed, talked about earlier, he's actually a sound and water scientist based in the United Kingdom, and he found how sound can actually heal, can very much be healing. So you have to be very careful in what kind of words you use.
It's like music. When you let water listen to music, if it, the music is really harmonious and beautiful music, then water makes beautiful crystals. But if it's destructive, the words are destructive, the music itself is really destructive, then the water cannot make crystals. That means sound. It's sound is vibration. Sound, we have to be very careful with what kind of sound we hear, what kind of music we hear, what kind of sound we hear.
Dr. Reed actually gave a really interesting presentation today, and you know, we were just able to talk to him for a few minutes after his talk to have him on the show today, and I'm so glad that he could. But one of the things he did mention, he mentioned a quote from the Bible, and the Bible said, "In the beginning there was the Word."
Yeah.
So it was just amazing that it I think, yeah, that was an amazing quote. One thing I wanted to ask you too about Shintoism in Japan, they believe that every entity and every word has a spirit behind them. Is that correct? Could you
right.
explain that?
Yeah, every word, everything has some spirit or we say deity. And in Bible, which is what?
Go ahead. Yeah.
In Bible, you say that at the beginning there was a word, there was the word. Dr. Emoto always said the word is made out of sound. Sound, because everywhere there's sound, the universe creates sound. Universe itself is sound, and sound is vibration. And depending on where you live, depending on the environment you have, the sound started to become your own language. So that's the beginning, and that's the really important thing.
We're running. We're having such a good time tonight. It's almost 2 o'clock in the morning here in Bulgaria. But one thing I wanted to mention is that Dolores Cannon was a famous American psychic, and one of the things that she wrote about and she told me years ago when I met her was that the ancient Egyptians, the way that they built the pyramids was actually through sound. They had a group of people surrounding the quarries, and they made certain tones, and they were able to shape and cut massive rocks and move them as well to create the pyramids. And they weren't using rocks and pulleys the same way that many people think. They were using sound technology and sound through the human voice to build these pyramids.
Yeah, I've heard of that too. And you know that I've seen some people who would break wine glass just with the sound, because sound is the energy. The vibration is energy. And what we can hear, human beings can only hear between 20 to 20,000 hertz, but there's much, much more than that. So sound can be something very beautiful. And when we resonate, when the sound resonates with other nature surroundings, it creates beautiful nature.
Okay. Thank you so much, Michiko, for sharing that. She'll again be in Iceland on October 30th, giving a presentation. For more details, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. She'll also be at Watkins Books in London and in Glastonbury as well next June in 2019. A week from today, I'll be having on Rolf Storr, who is one of Germany's most famous ethnobotanists. He's a fascinating man. We'll be talking about plant-based and spiritual medicine through plants. I really like Rolf, and I'll be actually visiting him next week in Germany. I hope you all have a wonderful and beautiful day, and I'm broadcasting tonight from Sofia, Bulgaria. It's a beautiful country full of many, many beautiful people. Could you, Eric, could you please play the water song now to wrap it up? And I hope everyone has a beautiful and happy day. Thanks so much for listening, friends, and for supporting Out of This World Radio. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
宙の彼方に